To have a father die of a heart attack right in front of you when he was 50 and you're 16 puts a kind of time bomb off in your mind. It's hard to see yourself living much longer than your father did. And as that year approaches, you hear ticking. Steve McKee, who works at the Wall Street Journal and lives in Brooklyn, neared that age and could practically hear ticking, or in his case, soft plaque collecting. He was a devoted runner, but couldn't outrun his genetic history. He was diagnosed with his own heart disease. The story of a son discovering his father and a new life for himself is told in Steve McKee's new memoir, My Father's Heart. He joins us from our studios in New York. Mr. McKee, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Your father was 43 when he had his first heart attack. How did that change him?
After that first heart attack, I think he sort of gave up. His father had had a heart attack in 1941 at age 53. And I think my father just figured, well, there's the deal.
Is it almost hard for us living in a time when, for example, famous football coaches have heart attacks and they're back on the sidelines 5 days later, to appreciate what a heart attack meant in 1963, when medical science was good enough to keep you from dying, but really couldn't do much to build you back up?
You know, thinking back on it, you know, he had his heart attack on February 2nd, and he was in the hospital for probably a good 4 weeks, pretty much literally flat on his back with orders not to raise his arms above his head. And then it was another probably 2 months at home, and it was all about just sort of resting. I mean, that I realize now that's all he really knew to do was sort of wait and see what would happen next. Mm-hmm. It actually makes me wonder how bad his heart attack could have been if it didn't kill him.
Can I get you to talk about the night he died?
Yes. It was the two of us at home alone, and we were watching Marcus Welby. And actually,
Robert Young is the kindly suburban doctor.
Yes, who had just in the show had just had a heart attack, and we're watching. And all of a sudden, I actually hear something before I see anything, and it is just air being pulled through clenched teeth, and I turn to look, and my father is his back is arched, very very straight, and he is like being pressed. I feel as though something was pressing him into the sofa, and then he started snapping back and forth a couple times. I don't really know how many times, but he'd be sort of thrown forward and then snapped back. I come over to him, and when his head would snap back, I could look into his eyes. He had beautiful green eyes. They were completely lifeless, sort of staring past me. I run upstairs to the phone. My mom's not home. She's down playing bridge at a friend's house about a half a mile away. And the phone's dead. They were building new homes in the development where I lived, and they were constantly taking out the phone lines. I go downstairs. I see Dad. At this point, he has stopped snapping back and forth, and he's just kind of limp. I then run outside to the neighbor up the hill, nobody home, run down past our house to the neighbor down below us. There's nobody home there. I go running back into the house, and I can remember specifically standing in the TV room telling myself not to panic. Don't panic. Don't panic. What am I going to do? So I go upstairs and get a blanket, bring it down, wrap it around him. At this point, there is white, foamy stuff coming out of his mouth, and I then run back out of the house, and I'm going to run up to the next house up the hill beyond where the first neighbor was, at which point a cop car comes cruising down the street. So I literally run this car down, and he ends up stopping in front of the house. And I
you start thumping on the police car.
Right. Yes. I'm running down, and I'm shouting at him. He's not stopping. So I start pounding on the trunk. At which point he stops very abruptly, and gets out of the car. And I explain what has happened. And then he walks into the house. I really really remember that real well. How he just very calmly walked into the house. And at that point, my father is almost completely off the sofa. He has wet himself, and he's kind of like hanging between staying upright and falling over. The cop comes over and looks for a pulse under his neck and sort of flops my dad's head back. I, at that point, then look for a pulse. I sit down next to him. You know, I like to think I found his final pulse. It's how I remember it. And it just was like this machine gun of beats. And then nothing. And I told the cop that he was dead. And at that point, I ran out of the house and then ran down to get my mother playing bridge.
One of your high school coaches gave you some very wise advice.
Yeah, Coach Jim Forge, and he was the basketball coach at York Catholic High School through the 60s. My dad died on Tuesday, September 30th, and I was out of school for a full week and got back on Tuesday the 7th. And I'm sitting in seventh period study hall, and as it turns out, I'm the only person in the study hall. It was one of these quirks of scheduling, mm-hmm. and the study hall is right next to Coach Forgeon's office. Now, you got to know a little bit about Coach. He's tall, thin. We're talking 1969, crew cut, thin tie, horn-rimmed glasses. You know, he's the classic nerdy coach. And again, I mean that in a good way.
Crew cut when much of the rest of the world right. had hair curling over
yes,
the ears.
Yeah. And he ruled the school. In addition to being the head basketball coach, he was also the school disciplinarian. So he comes and suddenly is standing there framed in a doorway. And he said, "Steve, get in my office." So at this point, I figure I am doomed. You know, I have no idea why, but I have to be. So I get into his office, and then we just sit there. He doesn't say a word. He's just scribbling on paper, whatever. And then finally he says to me, "How you doing?" I say, "I'm okay, Coach." And he just swats those words out of the air. And he says, "No, you're not. Your father just died. Your father just died, and you'll never get over it." I mean, it was stunning. It was absolutely stunning. But it also took all the tension out of the week, the previous week. And then he said, in almost a kindly sort of way, with his kind of a voice, he said, "But you will get used to it." And I've always, always remembered that. And I just will always be tremendously grateful.
Let me take your life forward, because you became you were a devoted athlete and runner, and one day you're sitting in a very fancy medical office and get a diagnosis that shakes you up.
Yes, that was tax day, 2005. I did one of those executive physicals, you know, the 8-hour thing with the treadmill test and you know, the nutritional analysis and the consult with the doctor and the full body scan, and then the 64 CT slice scan of the chest and the heart and all that. And I didn't want to do this. It was Noreen's idea. You know, from my standpoint, you know, what was it going to tell me? I was in good shape. I was in great shape. And that's what it told me. I did real well on the stress test. I was, you know, the aerobic capacity of a man, 8 years younger, recovery 20 years younger. So when I went in to see the doctor at the end of the day, I was fully prepared for my Lifetime Achievement Award. I mean, I really was. And we're sitting there, and Dr. David Fine, great, great person, the way he relates to you. He's got a really bold, kind of quirky sense of humor. And he points me to the computer screen that has all these, you know, my heart sliced into 64 pieces, and starts clicking through them. And then suddenly there it is. There's a white line in all this gray, and he didn't have to say a word. I knew exactly what it was. It was devastating, absolutely devastating, because I never, ever thought this was going to happen, because I had spent all those years keeping myself in good to very good shape. And here I was, I had just been certified as being in very good shape, and I still have heart disease. And it was absolutely devastating.
Did it make you feel that it had all been for naught?
For a while, yes. And the reason was, for a while, I equated the fact that if I had heart disease, then I therefore had to be like my father had been, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, in those 6 years. It took a while for me to realize that, no, even if I have heart disease, I am not like that part of my father I didn't want to be. You know, my dad, I felt, gave up. I had always fought against it. You know, that is his legacy to me. I have always fought against it. And here I am. You know, Dr. Fine even said, you know, there's no way to know for sure, but, you know, perhaps if I had not done what I had done all these years with my family history, I wouldn't even have been sitting in his office.
Well, what are among the hardest things of not having your father along these days?
It's all very much attached to the important moments in a life. It doesn't even, I don't even mean my life. It just in, you know, all the things in a life that are important, he has not been there since I was 16. You know, you could now tell me all the ones: my high school graduation, college graduation, my wedding. You know, probably the biggest one, though, clearly would have to be when we adopted, and my father wasn't there to sort of hand him off. Yeah, that would be number one, with the wedding right behind it. You know, and I also realize, and I say this in the book, that I'm telling a very ordinary story here, and if there's power in it, that's what it is. It's the fact that it's an ordinary story. You know, I'm not the only person whose father died of a heart attack. I'm not the only person whose father died when they were 16. But and it's ordinary, but there's the power, I hope.
Mr. McKee, thanks so much.
Thank you, Scott. I really appreciate it.
Steve McKee's new book is My Father's Heart, and to read an excerpt, you can come to our website, npr.org/books.